Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
This morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10,
Chapter 25, Text 7.
Aham chairavatam nagam. Aruyanu vraje vrajam. Marudganai mahavegai. Mahavegai nanda goshta jigam saya. Aham chairavagam. Aruyana vraje vrajam. Maruganai mahavegai. Nanda goshta jigam saya. Hamcha.
Also,
Airavatam.
Named Airavata.
Nagam. My elephant. Aruya,
riding.
Anuvraje.
We'll follow along.
Vrajam.
To Vraja.
Marutganai.
Accompanied by the wind gods.
Mahavegai.
Who move with great power.
Nandagoshta.
The cowherd community of Nandamara.
Jigamsaya.
With the intent of destroying.
Translation. I will follow you to Vraja, riding on my elephant Airavata and taking with me the swift and powerful wind gods to decimate the coward village of Nandamara. Translation, please repeat. I will follow you
to Vraja.
Riding on my elephant Airavata.
And taking with me the swift and powerful wind gods.
To decimate the coward village of Nandamara.
Purport. The Samvartaka clouds were frightened by Indra's powerful mood and thus carried out his order as described in the following verses. Text 8.
Translation. Sukadeva Goswami said, on Indra's order, the clouds of universal destruction, released untimely from their bonds, went to the coward pastures of Nanda Maharaj. There they began to torment the inhabitants by powerfully pouring down torrents of rain upon them. Purport, the Samvartaka clouds would cover the entire earth with a single vast ocean. With great strength, these clouds began flooding the simple land of Braja. Text 9, translation. Propelled by the fearsome wind gods, the clouds blazed with lightning bolts and roared with thunder as they hurled down hailstones. Purport, Sukadeva Swami explains that the word Marudgana indicates the seven great winds such as Avaha, who presides over the region of Bhuvaloka, and Prabaha, who holds the planets in their places. Text 10. As the clouds released torrents of rain as thick as massive columns, the earth was submerged in the flood and high ground could no longer be distinguished from low. Next 11. The cows and other animals, shivering from the excessive rain and wind, and the coward men and ladies, pained by the cold, all approached Lord Govinda for shelter. Text 12. Trembling from the distress brought about by the severe rainfall and trying to cover their heads and calves with their own bodies, the cows approached the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Text 13. The coward men and women addressed the Lord Krishna. Krishna, O most fortunate one, please deliver the cows from the wrath of Indra. O Lord, you are so affectionate to your devotees, please save us also.
Purport.
At the time of Lord Krishna's birth, Gargamuni had predicted,
Anena sarva durgani yuyam anjas tarishyata, Bhagavatam 10.8.16. By his grace, you will easily cross beyond all difficulties. The residents of Vrindavan were confident that in such a great emergency, Lord Srinarayan would empower Krishna to protect them. They accepted Krishna as everything, and Krishna reciprocated their love. So, first of all, we were reading about Indra's order to the Samvartaka clouds. And it mentioned there that the Samvartaka clouds were untimely released from their bonds. In other words, they are meant for they are meant to come when there is need for pralaya, destruction. And also there's mention of Samvartaka agni, Samvartaka fire, in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the different sorts of creations within the material world are mentioned, along with the pralaya, different pralayas, the destruction, different types of destruction. We know there's destruction of the body, our body, and there's so many other different types of destruction. And also it was mentioned that at different times there is annihilation also. At the end of the change of Manu, there's a partial annihilation, and at the end of the day of Brahma, there is another annihilation, and at the end of the life of Brahma, there is total annihilation. So the description we read in the Srimad Bhagavatam is that when there is a partial annihilation, the planetary systems up to the earthly planets are annihilated. At the end of the day of Brahma, all the planetary systems up to the heavenly planets, they are annihilated. So it is said that first of all there is raging fire coming from the mouth of Ananta from below. This is a description of the Samvartaka fire. Raging fire. Also, Lord Shiva assists when he opens his third eye. The fire comes also from that. And the sun becomes 12 times hotter. And therefore, and everything, first of all, there's drought that continues and continues and continues and continues. And then as it gets hotter and hotter, then everything starts to burn. In this country, we experience that quite regularly already. Practically, I think in Australia, there's maybe 4/5 of Australia is already desert. And so it wouldn't take much more drought to completely turn this country into total desert. But the description is there that there'll be drought and very severe drought and then burning, just like we also experience quite regularly here, forest fires. Bushfires. Bushfires that come in and ravage everything. You know, there's not much out there, and then the fires come in and destroy whatever there is. And so this is quite... So you can imagine that the sun gets 12... I mean, what could live? And if anything does live, then after the fire, this goes on for 36,000 years. 36,000 years. 100 years of the demigods. 36,000 years of fire, drought and then fire. And if something is living, then the rain comes after that from Vartaka. That's when the clouds are released. These clouds, the Samvartaka clouds, they are meant for this type of rain. And it just rains and rains and not for another 36,000 years. We have a few days rain here, it's something very rare. Imagine if it rains 36,000 years, non-stop, day in, day out, day. So this is pralaya. And it is so heavy, and the description is here that
that the rain is coming down and so torrential. Excessive rain and wind. Was it? Just as torrents of rain. But I've read another place. Oh, no. So clouds release torrents of rain as thick as massive columns. Rain that comes down as thick as massive columns. So sometimes you go to the tropical places and they have the monsoon season, and when it rains, but this is nothing compared to this type of rain. Now I've read in another place in the Srimad Bhagavatam that of all the elements within the universe and destructive force within the universe, it is said that the force of water is the most destructive, actually, force of water. You know, there's fire, there's wind, and other elements that sometimes come and are very destructive. But the force of water, and at the end of the pralaya, of course, everything is just submerged. There's no land, there's nothing. Remember the story of Markandeya Rishi, who was practicing great tapasya. And even he was tested by Indra when Kamadeva came there with apsaras and so on, and to distract him from his tapasya, but couldn't do so. They themselves were feeling burnt. They left. And then a little later on, the Supreme Lord Naranarayan came there to give darshan to Markandeya Rishi. He wanted to bless him. He was very pleased and satisfied. And then said to him that, I want to award you a benediction. What benediction do you want? And Markandeya Rishi was a bit curious to see how the material energy was working, how the Lord's energy, material energy was working. So the Lord granted him that desire. And after some time, a pralaya came, and it rained and rained and rained, and all of a sudden there was flood, and Markandeya Rishi was just floating. This was actually, I think, that at the end of the day of Brahma, and for a whole night of Lord Brahma, it is described. For a whole night of Lord Brahma, Markandeya Rishi was just floating in the ocean of devastation, and there were waves. Scriptures, there were waves as high as mountains. Waves as high. He was just floating in that. There was no other person. There were aquatics, fierce. Monster-like aquatics, like a huge Timangila fish. And the Prabhupada used to say, can eat the whale in a gulp. So they were like jumping out of the water and attacking each other right near where Markandeya Rishi was. And huge waves and fierce winds also, and very cold. Here also the description is that fierce winds, we were saying the other morning, that when you get a hurricane or something, or cyclone, you get these fierce winds, and quite often it goes very cold, and hail. We get that quite often in here in Australia, not on this level, of course, but you get the hail, you get the wind. So this was Markandeya Rishi, and he was floating like that for a whole night of Lord Brahma. Then finally he was floating, and there was one island that was effulgent, and he came close, and he saw a big banyan tree on that island, and in the banyan tree, on a leaf of the banyan tree was a small child. He was very evolved. He was very beautiful. So as he was gazing, he could understand that this was the Supreme Personality of God. And then when the Lord breathed in, all of a sudden, Markandeya Rishi went into the abdomen of the Supreme Personality of God. And when he went into the abdomen, he could see everything as it was before. His ashram, all the planetary system, there was no flood. And then when the Lord exhaled, he came out again, and he was back in the flood. He was back in the water. And then the Lord disappeared all of a sudden, and all the waters of devastation were dried up, and everything was as it was before. Markandeya Rishi was back in his ashram. And so this is the story of Markandeya Rishi. So that's the description of the pralaya that Markandeya Rishi wanted to see how this material energy works. So
the Lord put him in a very precarious position. Later on, Lord Shiva and Parvati came there and gave him, you know, asked Markandeya Rishi to ask for any benediction. And Markandeya Rishi said, "I just want unalloyed devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead." So we see that sometimes devotees are placed in these very fearful, seemingly fearful, fearful situations. Also mentioned here that Lord Indra gave the order that these clouds come, and he would follow behind, riding on Airavata, his carrier elephant. And not only that, he commanded fearsome wind gods. Marut, Marutganai, and Avaha presides over the region of Bhuvaloka. Pravaha, as mentioned, of these Maruts, great winds that work here, not only here on earth, but they work all over the universe. I remember reading some time ago in one of Sataputta's books about he researched all this and studied. There's seven, does it mention here? Seven winds. Mentioned? No. Anyway, I remember reading them. There are seven winds that operate throughout the universe, on earth and throughout the universe, and Avaha, Prabaha, Suvaha, I can't remember all the names. But they work in different ways. This Avaha is mentioned, presides over the region of Bhuvaloka. This is the wind I remember the description of this wind was that it especially comes to evaporate water from the ocean and then enables the water to be poured down in the form of rain. And Pravaha holds the planets in their places. Also, it is now, I remember Sataputta mentioning the Pravaha wind is not only on Earth, but travels all over the universe, and it's this Pravaha wind that keeps the planets in floating. And not only floating, but this Pravaha wind pushes the planets so they orbit. So it's due to the Pravaha wind that the planets orbit and they're pushed along. And there are other winds that push the clouds. There's another wind, Pravaha wind, I think, pushes the cloud. Other wind that creates a dark atmosphere and lightning blows on the mountains. There's one wind that is described that the yogis use. The yogis specifically use the seventh wind. Mentioned that they use the seventh wind for going out of the body. They would go out of the body and use this wind to go to the higher planetary systems. So these are the different winds, Maruts. So Lord Indra, he commanded, he is the king of heaven, and he commanded the winds to also accompany him along with the Samvartaka cloud. Lord Indra really meant to punish severely the inhabitants of Braj. Now, as Maharaj was mentioning yesterday, that the Brajbasis, Nandamara, you know, all the inhabitants of Vrindavan, were very wealthy because they tended to the cows and protected the cows and engaged in farming and so on. And so by that, they were very wealthy. And Indra, of course, thought that because of their wealth, they had become very proud. This is quite common, to become proud over your money. We see in Kali Yuga practically everyone is like that, proud over them. And the whole materialistic civilization is like that. And Prabhupada, when he came here to Melbourne, he said, "This is a very nice city here, Melbourne, for the materialist would want to come to this place, very clean, very nice, because they desire these things." They desire these things. They desire material opulence. And they are very proud. They are very proud of their city.
isn't it? Just like you just recently had the Commonwealth Games. You had the Commonwealth Games here, and just in Sydney a few years ago they had the Olympic Games, and I remember I was there, and they were very, they were cleaning the city. Normally the city is especially in different areas, is quite dirty, but when the Olympic Games, they cleaned their city, they even cleaned the buildings, and they wanted to, they really had a pride in their city. So these cities and money, and as Marge was saying, houses, property, people, they get very attached to these things and they get very proud of them. And when one is proud, and when one gets very proud and arrogant, as I was saying the other morning, that type of madness comes in. You get intoxicated by pride. Just like this morning, I was going on my japa walk. There were people out from last night, walking around, stumbling around the road, 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning, and they were intoxicated. So when someone is intoxicated, so one fellow, he just like walked into a car and you're walking all over the place. So they don't know really what they're doing, although they think that they've got everything under control. So society has become like intoxicated with pride due to these types of things, accumulation of money and wealth. And so Indra was thinking in this way that, these impudent inhabitants listening to the talkative boy Krishna, and I will punish them all and take away I will take away all their wealth. You take away someone's wealth and he becomes very humble. This was the point that was made yesterday. The people are so, I was just in India where it was a big thing, where I saw in the paper there that the 20 richest men of the world, the 20 richest people of the world, in the Forbes richest list or something. So it was huge news in India. They're very interested in these things. Who's the recipient? Not only that, but two or three Indians are on that list. So that was really something, before they were. But now they come in, and, who is that fellow over there in England? He's still.
Mittal.
Huh?
Mittal.
Yeah. He is like number 4 or 5 or something like that in the world. He's come right up, and, two or three others. They've come right up. So this was big news in India. How Indians now, they're very proud now that we have some of the richest people in the world, where they're on the list of the 20 richest people. So this type of pride is, is really a crazy type of pride, because at any moment it can all be gone. And people kind of know that, but they just keep going on thinking that it's everything. Money is everything. Money is everything. Beauty. If you can have these things, Sutta should be here. There's that one verse. If one can have wealth, if one can have beauty, if one can have knowledge, high education, and one can be in a good family, aristocratic family, that's everything. That's their all in all, isn't it? If a man can be very handsome, if a woman can be very beautiful, what they'd give to be like that. And they're all trying very hard. But who can actually achieve this, a constant state of beauty? A constant state of beauty. We're led to believe we can have it. In the magazines, on the billboards, just like I was in Perth, walking, doing japa, and there's this big billboard outside a grocery shop. Huge billboard, and on that, I was just looking at it, I was just thinking, what is this billboard? I see it every day, I didn't pay that much, but then one day I focused in on it. What is this billboard saying? So it was all young people on a boat. All young people and very beautiful women. It was... three young, handsome men and two very beautiful women. And they were laughing, smiling. And they were in a boat. And the ad was about chocolate milk.
but light chocolate milk. So I was thinking now, subliminally, you know, by advertising in this way, what did the beautiful people in the boat have with chocolate milk, I don't know, but they're advertising in this way that if you drink this light chocolate milk, you will have wealth because, you know, you'll have the boat. You'll have the beautiful woman or the handsome man, and you'll be young, and you'll be very thin, you see, very thin, because you're drinking the light chocolate milk. And not only you'll be thin, but you'll have all these other things as well. So we're getting, you know, that's just one billboard, you know, and one product. So we're getting all the time these things. Right? And the propaganda is this. And people hanker for these things. They would almost kill to be. Imagine if someone came up with, you know, a pill that would just keep you constantly beautiful. Forget the creams, forget the having to work out or whatever you have to do. Just take a pill, you know, he would be a gazillionaire overnight. Everyone would buy it. So these are the things that everyone is running after. The beauty and the wealth we've already, you know, everyone wants so much money, more and more and more. Just like the richest men in the world. The richest and the most powerful men in the world. What do they want? More money. They want more power and more money. You would think, well, he's got billions. Why isn't he just happy to... No, he wants to make more. But yeah, so they're running after more and more. They're mad after these things. And even if they get them, they're not satisfied. So who can have? But who can have constant wealth? Who can have constant beauty? Who can have knowledge? You know, your knowledge. Who can have constant? You know, as you get older, when you start to lose your memory about things, you learn something when you were young, and then you forget all these things. Prabhupada said actually that to learn knowledge is best in the youth. He gave the example of. Used to give the example of the father and the son. The father decided to go back to the university and do another degree. And the son was doing the same degree. He said, the son passed and the father failed. Son passed, father failed. He said, why? Because it's best to get the knowledge in the youth. In the old age, you may or may not have the power. Intelligence. One of the signs of intelligence is a good memory. I think I was reading somewhere just recently, there are seven signs of intelligence, and one of them is good memory, another one is discrimination, what is good and what is not. So there are different symptoms of intelligence. So to have a good memory, but the memory goes. The memory starts to go and the knowledge cannot be kept. So people, it's a futile attempt really, but everyone is running after, and a good family, everyone would like to have good family. But in aristocratic family, fame, and aristocracy, high family, I am the son of such and such, I am the daughter of such and such. Yeah, so everyone would love to have to be like that. Right. So these are the things that people run after, and unfortunately, because they're not trained in good qualities and humility, when they get these, you know, something by karma, they're able to get wealth, they're able to get beauty, they misuse and they engage these things in sinful activities. Prabhupada said, just like technology, he said, modern technology. He said, what does modern technology mean? He says, it means one man creates something. He creates a machine. So it creates a machine that can do things very quickly and do things that normally would take 20 or 30 people, would take weeks and maybe even months to do, the machine can do just in a few moments. So that man has created that machine. So then he is the only knower of that machine. So he used that machine to do the things very quickly. He gets, because of that, becomes very popular, and he makes so much money, but so many other people, they put out of work. They say, because before they were doing that work. But then the machine comes, and then the machine does the work. So then so many people are put out of work. And then what does that person who's using the machine use all that newfound wealth, all that money, what does he use it for? He uses it for, he said, the man, he will use it for trying to attract the opposite sex and trying to make a comfortable position in this world for himself. You see. So he'll misuse it. So people think like that. With all the money, when I get a lot of money, then what do I do with it? I have to engage in sense gratification with all this. Now I've got this money. I've got all this beauty. What do I do? What do I do with this beauty? Oh, I'll use it for engaging in sense gratification. Knowledge. What do I do with my knowledge? Oh, for sense gratification. Good high family. Let this use my our position, our prestige for sense gratification. So this is very, very unfortunate. Due to the laws of karma, these things come and go. So someone may have one of the hardest things for anyone. They formerly had a lot of beauty or wealth, fame, and all of a sudden, by karma, it is taken away. That thing is taken away. So Indra was thinking in that way. When it is taken away, generally, you're forced to become humble again. Just like, you know, years ago, I remember that the Premier of Western Australia, Burke, he was a big Premier of the state, and then it was found that there was some corruption, and he was tried in the court, and the big Premier ended he spent some time in the jail. He went to jail. Before he had the prestige, he was the big Premier, he was ordering everyone, and then he was in the jail. So these things are... So if one becomes attached to these things, it's actually a sign of meagre intelligence. He is less intelligent, Prabhupada would often say, use this term. Yeah, less intelligent person. Not so intelligent. Intelligent to do for activities in Sanskrit, but ultimately less intelligent because these are all short-term. But everyone is totally absorbed in that, totally conditioned by all that. Just like now is Easter. Everyone's running off, can't wait to get out of Melbourne. They're just driving here, driving there. I know, because I used to do the same thing. Driving off, and then you drive out of Melbourne, and you're stuck in the traffic jam for 4 hours, and you can't go anymore. And, you know, you go to other countries, Jakarta, you know, I was just recently in Jakarta, and we were stuck in the traffic jam going up to our temple in the hills there. And it was like hours and hours, and there was a long weekend or something like that. So I happened to get there on Friday night I was going up there. And they were just stuck. No one was moving. It was gridlock. Gridlock. And then, you know, then I saw the people, all these vendors, they're walking up and down the street there, and they're selling, you know, like different things, you know, fruits and nuts. And the people just stay there. I said, these people, they look like they're enjoying getting stuck in the traffic. One devotee said, yeah, it happens so often. They expect it, and they make it, they try it, and they make a day of it. In the traffic jam. He said, sometimes the traffic doesn't move all night. They just stay there in the one spot. He said, so bad sometimes, it doesn't even move. And the people... they just spend the night in their car or their van, and they expect that they come prepared. They've got their sleeping gear, and they just sit outside and they buy the things and they talk, and that's their like. And then by the time they get moving, it's time to come back. So you know, everyone rushes out to enjoy sense gratification. But even in the pursuit of sense gratification, do you actually get sense gratification? What type of sense gratification? That's like I was saying the other morning. People have to take holidays from their holiday. I met one man who went to the caravan park for Christmas or something, and it rained the whole time. So he had his three kids and the wife and the wife's sister. the wife's sister and the three kids and her kids, right? And so he was that, so everyone couldn't go outside. They had to spend the whole time in the caravan. He said it was a nightmare. He said, I'm coming back to have a holiday for my holiday. So people have these expectations of enjoying in the material world, but how they can enjoy. But, you know, even though they get punished, they suffer, you know, here we see, in the final verse I read, that the cowherd men and the women, They were seemingly, as mentioned here, suffering at the hands of the onslaught of Indra and the Samvartaka clouds and the wind gods, punishing them very severely. We see that the materialists, when these things happen, what do? They just try to make some other material arrangement to somehow or other try to minimise it. But the devotees, especially the Brajbasis, they immediately take shelter of the Supreme Personality of God. Now, not only that, though, very interestingly, here they say, "O most fortunate one, please deliver the cows from the wrath of Indra." So first of all, they're thinking about the cows. They're thinking about the cows. The first thought, not even thinking about themselves first. They're thinking about, whereas in the Kali Yuga especially, those in the mode of ignorance and passion, the first thought is about themselves. And as far as protecting cows, they're killing the cows. So, just like in India, I was just reading, that now India is becoming more and more meat-eating country. 80% meat-eating. Only 20% is considered vegetarian in India, and becoming less. And then there was one, and then who is proliferating the slaughterhouses? One group that advertises itself as so, mainly there's one group that advertises itself as so afraid of the karma that they have to wear, the masks over the mouth and everything like that. They are the ones who are opening more and more slaughterhouses. They don't want to kill the insects. They don't want to create. I'm not saying, but someone said like that. But these are the ones opening more and more slaughterhouses in India and making money. So instead of protecting cows, they're killing. Well, in India, even the cows are killed. It's starting to come more and more. But the Brajbasis, no question of harming the cow. First thought, protect the cows. And if you are so affectionate to your devotees, if you so desire, please save us also. So this is the first and foremost consideration of Nanda Maharaj and the other cow and men and women, that save the cows. So it may seem that the Supreme Personality of Godhead creates a very extreme condition for his devotees. What type of suffering? I mean, even materialists, don't have to endure this type of suffering. Why does Krishna, put his devotees through this type of... Krishna creates a situation where the devotees... don't really. It appears that they suffer. And this is a point made here. It appears that they suffer, but they're not really suffering. They're feeling some anxiety, but they absorb themselves. They become so more absorbed in meditating on Krishna and taking shelter of Krishna. They're feeling something actually increases their blissfulness. And simultaneously, it chose the world that it chose the example to the world how we are devotees. We are so affected by even the slightest disturbance. The slightest disturbance, we forget Krishna. We didn't get enough prasadam this morning. Someone took our gamsha. That devotee is, "Hey Prabhu, you're wearing my kurta. That's the last time, that's it. I'm out of here." I remember one devotee was like that. He came back, he left and he came back, and I said, "What happened?" And because, when he left, we found his beads and bead bag. He didn't take any, We knew it was a real kind of bloop. We saw his beads and we saw all his dhotis and everything like that, books, notebooks, and he just left. And he came back and he said, that was it. I just had enough. Someone took my gamsha, someone took my kurta, and then someone else did this and did that, and that was it.
I had enough and I left. But then when I went out there, I suffered more. He said, in the beginning it was all right, but then after a while, then the suffering came. So Krishna was very kind to him. We think we can suffer less in the material world because we're suffering more in the association of devotees. We think like that. But that is just getting purified, that's it. You're getting purified. I always remember that in the Leelamrita. I remember Tamal Krishna Raj also telling that when they were first in Juhu Beach, she said it mentioned there in the Leelamrita that they, you know, it was just jungle there. And there were big gigantic rats and snakes and all sorts of things. And he went to Prabhupada and he said, Prabhupada, very difficult here. You know, we're from Western country. I don't think we can endure such hardships. And Prabhupada here said, but don't you want to be purified? Don't you want to be purified? So this is all for our purification. A little hardship. Just like when Prabhupada was on a morning walk here. I think it was Churu. Churu asked Prabhupada, he said, Prabhupada,
yes.
Prabhupada, you know, many people think that this Krishna consciousness is too difficult. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada said, what is the difficulty? He said, just like we have to get up very early in the morning, 4 o'clock, we have to get up. Prabhupada stopped him. He said, oh, but that is very good for you. Mm-hmm. He said, what is that saying? Early to bed, early to rise, makes the man healthy, wealthy and wise. So, you know, now we may think there are some difficulties. We have to get up early, we have to do this. But you don't think that the materialists also, have to tolerate hardships. You think that someone loves to get up to the alarm clock to go to work. I love to get up and go to work every day. Who can say that? Maybe someone can say, but I don't think we need to believe them. I love going to work. I love getting stuck in the traffic. I also remember that, you know, Prabhupada saw some businessmen, they were parking their car and they were walking. Prabhupada said, why do they park their car here? Because it costs so much money to park in the city, so they park here. He said, oh yeah, but they're such big businessmen, they cannot even afford to pay for the parking of their car. They drive the big car, the big suit, and then they have to walk into the city because they can't afford to pay for the parking for the big car. You know, I always remember that. Someone told me one time about a Rolls Royce. If you have to ask how much it costs to run this car, you can't afford it. It's like the Rolls Royce was famous, having a big motor that, you know, you have to put so much petrol in there just to keep it going. So if you were worried about it, then you couldn't afford this car. For people, they have all these things, but, you know, they have to suffer. They have to park outside, they have to walk into the city. So you don't think that materialists have to do tapasya. They're doing so much tapasya. So we may complain, as a devotee we're doing so much tapasya. But if one is in the right consciousness, even with this tapasya, and it said the tapasya is the wealth and beauty of the brahmanas. The brahmanas, or someone who's a brahmana, welcomes tapasya. He likes tapasya. He likes, because he utilizes it to become more and more religious, to become more and more God conscious. So devotees, we embrace these things. This is our attitude. So in difficulty, just like Nanda Maharaj and the Karad men and women of Vrindavan, they thought of Krishna more and more and more. Please help us, Krishna. Please save the cows. Please, if you so desire, save us also. You are affectionate to your devotees. You are very affectionate. Bhakta Vatsala. So we see that Krishna, he has so much affection. Come under this hill.
And I read in another place that under the hill there was all sorts of activities going on, and it was very beautiful under the hill. Krishna made an amazing arrangement. Normally, if anyone could pick up a hill, someone picked up a hill underneath, there would all be just barren rock and dirt. But when Krishna picked up, they all went underneath the hill, and it was very like green pastures and roads and houses, and it was very nice under the hill. It wasn't dark or anything like that. It was just so Krishna made a very nice arrangement for his devotees. They didn't feel anything. Even Govardhan himself didn't feel when the rains were coming down. He was feeling so much ecstasy having the touch of Krishna's little finger. He didn't feel anything. And then later on we'll read that actually even the flood that was coming down was dried up. I remember reading that Krishna actually sent his Sudarshan Chakra up and practically as soon as the rain came down, it was dried up. So Krishna makes such a nice arrangement for his devotees. But we have to learn to be grateful for what Krishna has given us. If you're an ungrateful person, then you may not appreciate. To be grateful is a symptom of a devotee, gratefulness. Unfortunately, the materialists are not very grateful. They get things, they're still not satisfied. They want more. They're greedy. They become very, very... I think the greed principle is very strong, especially in Kali Yuga, amongst the materialists. Very, very greedy. More and more greedy. When you become greedy, you become very stingy. You don't want to give anything to... I was at the Holi celebration in Sydney just last week or whatever, a week before, and we were there, and one young Indian boy came out, not young boy, but he was a youth, and he was like telling jokes, and one joke I thought was quite funny. He said that it's not very good for Indians and Chinese to do business together. Because he said both are very greedy, and not only that, but they are very stingy. So each one is trying to undercut the other one. He said the Indian man, he approaches the Chinese, he wants to get a cut, and the Chinese, he doesn't want to give a cut. Like one devotee was telling me, he goes to Hong Kong regularly, He says to the Chinese merchant, he says, "Now I'm buying 1,000 of these things. Can you give me any discount?" "Yes, we will give you 50 cents off." Off each piece, right? "We'll give you 50 cents off." So this is the mentality. So I thought it was a very funny joke. Of course, but everyone, not only the Indian and the Chinese, but especially the Indian, the youth made a joke like that. And everyone had to laugh, actually, because they understood it's actually quite correct. So, but everyone now in the Kali Yuga become more and more greedy, become more and more stingy. And they're only caring about themselves. No gratitude. When you have no gratitude, you become very selfish. Very, very selfish. But when you're grateful, as... you know, the inhabitants of Vrindavan, always grateful to Krishna. And then you become grateful to everyone. And you become humble. When one is grateful, then one is satisfied. But if you're not grateful, then you can never be satisfied. Whatever you get, you'll never be satisfied. You always want more and more. So here, the residents of Vrindavan were confident that in such a great emergency, Lord Narayan would empower Krishna to protect them. They accepted Krishna as everything, and Krishna reciprocated their love. This is an interesting point that they thought that, because they never thought Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They just thought maybe he's a great person, and they were worshipping God, and they thought God would empower Krishna somehow or other. It's not that they had a misunderstanding. They just, because of Yoga Maya, they had, because we know that Krishna, Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchitananda, we know that Krishna is the origin of all, even Lord Narayan. But here it is mentioned that the residents of Vrindavan were thinking that Lord Narayan
would empower Krishna. That was out of their blind love for Krishna. They just didn't think he was God, that he was just a small child. So they accepted Krishna as everything. They were confident. They were also confident that Krishna would protect them. So in this way, they're not afraid. So if we have also, if we have confidence in Krishna, then we won't be afraid. This is a very interesting point. When we lack confidence, we will be afraid. Right? When you have confidence in a thing, then just like an athlete, they have confidence that they can jump the hurdle. They have done it before. The hurdle is set at a height. They have confidence. They're not afraid. But if someone doesn't have confidence, they're afraid. Oh, now it's time to do it. Will I do it? Won't I do it? Will I make it? So they're afraid. But if you're confident, oh, it's no problem. I've done it before 1,000 times. Just go ahead. So similarly, if we have confidence in Krishna, what will we be afraid of? But we have fear when we don't have confidence in Krishna. And therefore, we have to look. We think we have to look for so many other means of protection and shelter. It's like I was telling one devotee up at the new governor, and she was asking about doing all these other alternate types of therapies for, you know, getting a peaceful mind and this and that. I said, well, you know, chanting Hare Krishna will give you all that. Never give up your chanting. Because actually, if you have faith in that and confidence in that, you will achieve all that. But if you lack faith and confidence, then you may think you need all these other things. So if you don't have the faith and confidence, then maybe you need to do these things. But if you have faith and confidence, then you won't need to do these things, because chanting, you'll feel very peaceful, you'll feel very satisfied. So it's a question of faith and confidence. So, you know, there was no question in the minds of Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men, cowherd women, and all the inhabitants. They had full confidence in Krishna. They took shelter of Krishna. And Krishna reciprocated and protected them totally from the onslaught of Indra, the Samvartaka clouds, the Maru winds, everything. And they were fully protected. Not only that, they actually even enjoyed the situation. All right, there's Hare Krishna. Does anyone have any question or comment? Yes.
You say when the tsunami happened, you say their religion was very soft, devoted to God.
When that's what tsunami happened?
When there was tsunami.
Yeah.
Well,
they lost their faith, didn't they? But some of them thought this was coming from God. I remember reading that too. So some that they lost their faith, and some they understood that somehow or other this is some karma. Some actually understood that. Many Muslims actually said like that. This is some karma coming. And some others. But why is... then? Because when it comes like that and they have to suffer, then they complain. Oh, why God is punishing us so severely. You know, just like in India, many times I've asked Swami. They say, Swami, we are the land of Dharma. But why is there so much suffering? I said, because you're not following the Dharma. If you follow the Dharma, then you won't suffer so much. So because you are not following, then you are suffering. So when people don't follow, then they're going to get reaction. I think Maharaj explained this point very well yesterday. They get reaction. The point about karma is to rectify you. If you, what was it, how did you put it? If someone hears, isn't it? If you, how do you say?
Then you get the back on you.
Now you mentioned something, if someone actually listens to Krishna,
uh-huh.
Yeah,
So if you actually listen and then follow, then everything's all right. But when you don't listen, then you have to be rectified. More. It wasn't the word you used, but I think that was the point. That if you don't listen, then you have to be rectified. So these things all come about because we don't want to listen. Actually, this is another point that's made here. Machita sabadurmani makpasaratarishisi tachita mahanga nasa shashibinaksi. Krishna mentions the same thing. He says, if you hear me and follow my instructions, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. But if you do not and act out of false ego, then you will be lost. Machita sabadurmani. There are many obstacles in conditioned life, in so many ways. And Krishna says, but if you hear me and follow it, then you will pass over them. If you don't, you will be just act according to your false ego, you will be lost. Any other question? Jai Guru Sri Prabhupada ki jai.